I'm a bit, I've broken with my tradition, and we're starting the meeting 9 minutes late, but we better get started. Welcome to everybody. It's a really exciting, actually, to be back and see everybody. I think that means we've been gone long enough, so we're... But also, it's because we have an exciting topic tonight, and that has controversy with it, which is always our funnest topic. The race to the top is in application with the guidelines from the federal government and what so many people have worked on to put in this application. I think a real opportunity for our state. There's so much good stuff and the big picture type things. And as always here at the legislature, the devil is in the details. And in the case of this application, from my viewpoint and a lot of people I've talked about, also in some of the processes. So I think we'll have a good chance to have some discussion. And this is one meeting where we'll see how it goes, but it might go a little bit over, even though usually we don't do that with the K-12 committee, because this is our only opportunity to enter in as a legislature before districts make the decision on the 13th and the application is sent in on the 19th to see if Minnesota gets $175 million or less for implementing this application. So from the standpoint of the theme of this meeting is we're really interested in finding out not so much the details of the application. All the legislators were sent the information, granted only yesterday, but we expect all of us to be very good students and have a chance to take a look at it. So we don't want to have 101, like what does it mean, or what are the four assurances, or any of that kind of discussion. We want to focus on how is this going to help our students, what is the unifying philosophy, if there's any reform in here, does it have any basis for evidence that it would really help students and help with the achievement gap that's been eluding us in our state for quite a long time? Turning around schools, what's in the application that will actually work? And this is a joint meeting of education policy, education finance, and the early childhood committee. So I've got the other two chairs to my left and my right, and I would like to give both of them a chance to make an opening statement before we start. So I'll start with the policy committee chair, Representative Mariani.
Well, good evening, everyone. Happy New Year to you all. Hopefully, we won't have a foot of snow when we're done with this hearing, but it's possible in Minnesota. I'll be very brief. I'm really glad that we're taking time out to have this discussion with the department. The department is responsible for making an application to the federal government for Race to the Top funding. The Race to the Top proposal is meant to be, frankly, nothing short of driving major education reform in states across the country, and to do so by heavily focusing on addressing race equity, in my opinion, race equity issues in terms of unequal outcomes in our educational system, or another way of saying that is closing education gaps. And so I'm looking forward to hearing from the department about how all these pieces in this big proposal, how they all work with one another, how they're aligned with one another, and also with how well they're meant to work with our existing policy in the state of Minnesota. And then obviously as a state legislator, I'm real interested in knowing what challenges and opportunities anything in this proposal poses to existing statutes in Minnesota that would require our active participation in partnership with the Department of Education. So I'm looking forward to a good conversation this evening, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Mariani. Representative Slaughter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Happy New Year to everyone. I'm glad to see you all here tonight. First of all, I want to acknowledge for the Early Childhood Committee members, thank you for coming. I know we have several members here, including Representative Downey, Representative Mack, Representative Peterson, Representative Bly, and Representative Lane. I think I got all the early childhood folks. I want to acknowledge them because, well, early childhood is a part of the application as an invitational part, it actually isn't part of the overall, and we really want to acknowledge, okay, that was a federal issue, but we all know that if we really want to close the achievement gap, the best place to close it is early childhood education. So for me, it's disappointing it's not hidden here. The feds decided that, but we are hoping that there will be early childhood challenge grants that will be coming out that also this legislature and we'll be working with the Minnesota Department of Education to approve. Two quick points. One, in the parts of the application pertaining to early childhood, we would hope that the part that has to do with the invitational early learning outcomes, there's aid for early childhood screening and creating curricular frameworks at some time. We hope we can learn more about exactly what that means. It's not clear to us as much exactly how that will be interpreted. We also are hoping to see more innovation in terms of the application. In terms of the longitudinal data systems, one concern we have is we know early childhood education isn't just what happens in MDE, but a lot of kids, most kids, under age 5 are actually in childcare, and childcare is early learning and early education. So when you look at the application and how it applies, and you look at that longitudinal data system, it doesn't apply to the childcare part or the anything to do with the Department of Health as far as early childhood goes. So we would hope that maybe that could be included. So I want to thank Chair Greiling for and Chair Mariani for including us. I know I missed the last one. I teach early childhood and public policy, and I was teaching that night. So I heard it was a very good hearing, and I'm eager to be part of this tonight.
Very good. Thank you very much, Representative Slawik. And I also want to acknowledge that for this meeting, we have the Ways and Means Committee Chair with us, Representative Solberg, and the Finance Committee Chair, Representative Carlson. So welcome. They're ex-officio members of our committee, but usually in the hustle and bustle of the session, they don't have a chance to come. And so we appreciate your being here tonight as well. And we have a good agenda, I think, for getting out our questions. We're starting out with Commissioner Alice Segrin, and whoever she chooses to bring up, you could start on your way up if you would. And then we're hearing a little bit from the Executive Director of the Board of Teaching, Karen Ballmer. We have Bob Meeks, the Executive Director of the Minnesota School Board Association, Charlie Kite, the Executive Director of the Superintendents Association, Education Minnesota, Jan Alsweiger, and she has others with her perhaps. And then for public testimony, there's two people that have signed up so far, and if anyone else is interested, we'll see how far we get, but you could let the staff know. We have Roger Aronson from the principals, elementary and secondary, and Pam Costain, school board director from Minneapolis. So we have a full agenda, and time will be fleeting, I'm sure. And Commissioner Segrin, welcome. And she has been traveling around the state with herself and her staff, getting feedback on this. Many of us, three chairs here and others sitting in for us, have been at the stakeholder meetings as this was developed. And I know a lot of hard work has gone into it, and the commissioner did have a PowerPoint to bring, but we asked to focus on, we asked the legislators to do their homework, I won't say for a change, I guess, but normally we come to these meetings expecting us to go through everything, and we don't think we have to do any studying ahead, but this meeting is an exception, because we know we have such a short amount of time between now and January 13th when the districts are signing on. So we're going to have Q&A, but I think I will give you like 2 or 3 minutes if you want to give some general comments. So Commissioner Segrin, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I appreciate the comments, and actually Representative Mariani's kind of wanting to kind of set the stage about the four assurances and how they're all linked together, because I think that is the focus of Race to the Top with the assurances. that they do want us to look at all of the things we have been doing in our state, things that we can scale up, ramp up, change, or add to what we're already doing to basically close the achievement gap and also assure that all students are achieving at high levels. So, you know, just to talk about that briefly, the things that we are focused on through Race to the Top, things we desire as a state, would be to close the achievement gap, to have high overall achievement as compared to compared to international benchmarks for all of our students, foster quality and accountability in the classroom, elevate the teaching profession, and when you look at the great teachers and leaders, you will see a lot of things in there for supporting teachers that, you know, we can talk about as you've read the application. We want to raise the level of community engagement, support, and collaboration for schools, and we want to use technology more expansively. And the bottom line is, if we craft this good proposal, our great proposal, we'll position Minnesota as a national leader, as a lighthouse for other states. And I think that that's what the Obama administration is looking for. I think that because of this competitiveness, they are looking for lighthouse states that will look at all of those different assurances and put an integrated approach together, I think, to see whether they can then scale those up across the country. So this is an opportunity for all of us to really dream boldly, think about the things that we want to do with our kids, things we've already started in our state, and really try to ramp those up. And then we also want to build on our strengths, as I said, to make those step changes to get us to closing the achievement gap and all the other things we've dreamed up for our kids. And then recognize the excellence that's present in our state and face the challenge of the achievement gap head on. So to answer Representative Mariani's question, the Race to the Top application, from the standards and assessments, we want to make sure that we have high expectations for all students. And we have developed really strong standards. We're part of a consortia that is required under the Race to the Top in developing the standards that would be common to states. We are also recognized for our assessment system, and we're going to be looking at, and I think all of us are pleased with the focus now and the move to not only a summative type of assessment, but also the kind of rapid turnaround type of assessment that can be interim during the school year for teachers to inform their practice. So we'll be working on and developing assessments with states that will do both, have the summative and the formative type of tests that we want for our teachers. Then when you look at your data, they don't, they meaning the U.S. Department of Education, the Obama administration, don't want us just to develop a data system for the sake of collecting a lot of data that's going to sit on the shelf, but data to improve instruction, to look at and analyze what's going on in those beat the odds schools. How are we going to integrate this information? How are we going to train teachers to use the data that they get swamped with sometimes, and it's really hard to sort through all of it. How do you use it effectively to improve instruction, to know what's happening in the classroom? And then they also want to use the longitudinal data system for research, to ask those questions about what is happening and how can we move things, not only through the K-12 system, but how can we have an integrated approach from pre-K, which is what Representative Slavik was talking about, starting early and watching and following those students all the way through their college experience, if that's what they choose, and work. So we're going to have a broad linkage, even to the workforce with DEED, with the Department of Economic Development, looking at what happens with students. So we're really excited about that. And then moving on to great teachers and leaders, we all know, and the research proves, that the most important thing that we can have in the life of a child beside a really engaged parent is a wonderful teacher in the classroom. And so we know that the research says that if you've got a good, strong, effective teacher, you will have really strong academic gains. If you don't, if you have two or three ineffective teachers, a student sometimes never recovers academically. So that is part of the focus of the Obama administration, is to assure that we have great teachers and leaders. And so we have tried to think about all of the things from the continuum, from preparation when you go into a teacher college. What should happen in that program? We're working very closely with the Bush Foundation. They have $40 million that they have used, and they are looking at retooling a number of the preparation programs in the state of Minnesota and in South Dakota and North Dakota also. Really exciting, strong partnership. And then how do you then have develop exit criteria for that candidate? What does that look like? Not just a paper-pencil test, but what are the demonstrations that you can use? And we're also focused a lot on, we need more clinical experience for that preparation candidate that's learning. So there's a lot of exciting things. And then what happens when you get hired? We want to really have a strong induction system, and we have worked actually 4 or 5 years ago, developed an induction system with Education Minnesota, MNSCU, MDE, and the University of Minnesota. We're going to scale that up through Race to the Top so that every district has the opportunity to have a really powerful induction program for their beginning teachers. And then as we go through all the professional development that teachers need as they're looking at the standards and how to implement them, the best practices of instruction, et cetera. And then, of course, the heart of our great leaders and teachers will be the linkage that is required for teacher performance, pay for performance, to the performance of teachers and that pay. We're using our QComp model because it's comprehensive. It's not just simplistic that you use academic achievement data and link that, and that's the only thing you do to say that a teacher is effective. We don't believe that that's the entirety of a teacher's career, that there are a lot of other professional practice and things that should be examined as a teacher goes through their year. So that's why we selected the QComp program. It's nationally recognized, and we're excited about having that as a component of our process, along with many other professional development things that we're going to be providing for teachers. And then finally, the challenge of turning around the lowest performing schools. And the federal government has prescribed sort of a formula, if you will, for deciding who those lowest performing schools are. We know that we're going to have about 30 to 40 schools in the state of Minnesota. And then the criteria for Race to the Top is fairly prescriptive. But we are working very closely with, first of all, we know Minneapolis and St. Paul will have a few sites. And then there are some others that we think will be identified. And so we're working closely with them to say, what are the kinds of strategies that we can use? Because St. Paul and Minneapolis, frankly, have done many of the things that are prescribed. They have fresh started schools. They have closed some schools. They have done innovative strategies also. And so our new legislation that passed last year aligns really well with having a site-governed model, sort of like another charter school concept but controlled by the district, but giving a site great flexibility in how they want to turn around a school. So we've got a lot of exciting things around that that we'll be doing. So that kind of is kind of the integrated approach, putting it all together to look at strategies to close the achievement gap. We're going to create an office of turnaround schools that will be an independent office outside of the agency. We will have an RFP that will be put out to the public. It could be a higher ed institution, it could be a nonprofit, it could be a combination of that, where we would have experts that would really be the folks that would come in and work with the schools on an ongoing basis with these 30 to 40 schools so that they have the support during the 4 years that Race to the Top is there. And if this becomes a really phenomenal organization, then that's something that we can look at in the future. Is something that we might want to continue funding. But there's an opportunity to try some bold and innovative and supportive things for our teachers and our principals. I also want to mention our principal leadership is very important to Race to the Top. It's been something that I've been very committed to over my tenure as a legislator and also as commissioner. We really know that a good principal leader in a school makes a difference. Having a good team of teachers with a principal that is very supportive and is an instructional leader is very important. We've got our principal academy that we will ramp up also. So that I went over 3 minutes. I'm sorry.
But, yes, you did.
It's a lot of stuff in Race to the Top. We have a STEM invitational also, and I want to also address Representative Slawik. We are going to have strong language in about early childhood and the things that we'll be doing and the future things we would like to do with early childhood. Our STEM initiatives are very strong because we have worked very, thanks to all of you, have grown our STEM work very boldly, and we have a lot of good things going on in the state of Minnesota in that area. So we really feel like we'll have some strong points accumulated there. So that's kind of it. We know we have 50% of the money that goes to LEAs, 50% that goes to the agency. We are not going to keep that money. We're going to hold back maybe 10 to 20% for some of the statewide things, but the rest of the money is going to the district. So 80 to 90% of the money that we get for Race to the Top are going directly to the districts. I think that's going to be different than other states. I think other states are going to hold back much more of that. But we wanted to make sure that every district had the opportunity to participate in Race to the Top and have sufficient funds to be able to do the kinds of things that they would like to do to support the profession.
Thank you. And while you take a breath, I just remembered I forgot to have us approve the minutes. My staff is down there, so they don't get a chance to poke me like normal when I forget these things. So could I have, we had a meeting on October 29th, which was also a joint meeting of these three committees. Could I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So
Representative Garofalo moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, October 29th. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes for October 29th are approved. Commissioner Segrin, I've heard you in the paper many times, and probably a lot of us have been, every chance we get, we've said the same thing, which is we keep missing on doing anything much about Minnesota's achievement gap, and we are sometimes second, I don't know what we are exactly right now, right after Washington, D.C., in terms of our huge achievement gap. And Minnesota's application for Race to the Top has as our very first and, you know, foremost reason for an overarching goal or aspiration, I think is what is listed in there, is to close the achievement gap. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that a lot of what is in here is things that Minnesota's already doing and more of it. So what exactly would you pinpoint, other than just repeating what you already did say, that's going to finally address Minnesota's achievement gap through this money?
Well, first of all, Representative Greiling, the criteria for Race to the Top are very specific. So if it looks like we are doing a lot of what we've been doing, we are actually reflecting the requirements of the
exactly.
Of Race
but
to the
I,
Top.
But I know that, but yeah. I'm just saying beyond that, beyond what's in the application, mm-hmm. beyond what they asked for, because, you know, you and I share commiseration over what they're asking for in the sense that sometimes it's very narrow or not thinking outside the box as much as we would like. But what is there in this application, despite all of that, that does that, that will address the achievement gap?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that will be very influential to closing the achievement gap. One, creating the Office of Turnaround Schools. I think that that is going to be something that it will be different than many states because what we will do is assemble a group of experts that will have the best practice research behind them that will be able to go in as teams and work with these turnaround schools. We're also going to be having direct liaisons and people in those turnaround schools working continually with the teachers and with the principals.
And they'll just be working, though, won't they, with the 1% lowest school?
Well, it's the 5%.
It's
the 5% of the lowest performing schools. So first of all, we had to look at who were the lowest performing schools were, that 5%. And then mm-hmm. the way they've interpreted it is 5% of those 5%. So it's kind of, maybe you're right, it's 1%. Mm-hmm. But 1%. It's a very small number. We thought originally it was going to be like over 200, but as they gave us more guidance. And I think maybe the reason they want to do that is they want to challenge states to get to the highest need schools and really look very strategically about what are the things that need to happen.
So what then is in the application that will deal with the achievement gaps that we have in each and every one of our districts all around the state? Most of us won't have those really low schools. I think it's great that they are turning around low schools, but that's such a small number, and there are kids at the lower end of the achievement gap, you know, even in Representative Benson's district.
Mm-hmm.
So what is in here that will help with that?
Well, I think it should be all the intensive supports that will be surrounding these schools. So teachers will have an additional 10 days of professional development. They'll have a lot of support. The principal also will have. We're actually going to identify those principals that are in those turnaround schools, and they will have additional training. They will have the principal academy training, but it's going to be designed to focus on what other beat-the-odds schools have done in the nation and what are the strategies that they can employ in those turnaround schools. We're going to have very intensive support, as I said, with the Office of Turnaround Schools. We will have additional extended time. The idea would also be to provide more time for the students to be educated, so that's one of the things that can happen. As I said, we're also going to be experimenting with, or Minneapolis and St. Paul particularly are very interested in a whole site kind of renewal, if you will, allowing more flexibility for that site to have a stability of teachers so that, you know, in case there's layoff, that we would work with the union's management to make sure that if teachers are there, they've been trained, that they'll be able to stay there for a period of time so that they can really get engaged with the education of the students. So it's not kind of just one thing. It's a number of things. It's using data. We'll have data coaches that will come in and be particularly with them. If you have a large school district, we'll actually have a manager of the school, if you will, so the principal can be relieved of those kind of management duties so that he or she can really focus on the instructional support that the teachers need, building that team.
Will there be funding for data coaches after the 4 years?
Well, we're hoping that the data coaches, the idea between that, we'll have train the trainer model, so we'll be training data coaches in all of the school districts, and we're hoping at the end of that time that that would be kind of infused into the structure of the school district, that will actually be part of the structure of the school. Because some of this stuff should be fundamental. It should be part of the school and ongoing anyway. A lot of school districts have teachers on special assignment. One of those people could be a data coach, somebody particularly trained. So it's looking at what you're doing now and saying, what are the fundamental things? If this really works, then let's continue doing it. And that's what Race to the Top is giving us an opportunity to do also. We may have in our application things that we think are good, that the feds think are good ideas. But as we're implementing them, we may see that they need to be tweaked, or maybe they aren't so good, that the research and the evaluation that we're seeing, and that's one important thing, we're going to have constant evaluation of these things.
One of the things that would be good, but that's what I'm not so, I don't see the evidence of it yet, but maybe you could expand on that, and that is all these various things that Minnesota has, and then, you know, we're adding a few things in there, where is the alignment of making sure that all the things have this common philosophy with what's being proposed and what's existing? And for instance, the teacher preparation, licensure, tenure, the support of teachers, you mentioned the coaches, and then the pay and work. You know, yesterday I had a chance, or was it yesterday anyway, one of these days, had a chance to have some of these discussions with Karen Ballmer, who we have coming up next, and we were trying to figure out how does the teacher licensure and the tiers and, you know, tie in with QComp and what's being done in the teacher preparation. And, you know, none of us were sure how they tied in. And, okay, you know, it just seems that if this is really going to have that extra magic dust that goes with it, mm-hmm, we need to have the Board of Teaching not asking those questions or any of us out in the field. If it's going to all work, how is it going to align?
Well, if you're looking at the preparation part of it, what we're trying to do is create a continuum of excellence. So we know that we're going to be losing a lot of teachers to retirement. So we've got good, strong teachers that are going to be gone from the classroom. So this is an opportunity, particularly because we have new expectations for our kids for the 21st century. We're competing globally with countries that are much higher performing than we are academically. So one of the things we know that they do is they recruit and they really train very rigorously those candidates for teaching. And so we want to make sure that, first of all, our preparation programs are retooled and sufficiently rigorous enough so that when those teachers get into the classroom, they will be well prepared, or prepared as a beginning teacher, to start to do a good job. So we're looking at that. The Bush Foundation, as I mentioned, is putting a lot of money into many of our preparation programs to do just that, to re-examine the standards of effective practice, see if they need to be aligned. We want to make sure that they are aligned with our standards, because if teachers are not being taught what we're expecting them to understand in the classroom, we're going to have a disconnect. So
that's
part of the continuum.
Then what if we get the common standards, you know, with the other states, and they don't align with, you know, what we're already doing or what's being done in the teachers' institutions?
We don't expect Representative Growling that will happen. We have been at the table all along with the Common Core, because Minnesota has been recognized as having very strong standards. When other states, when No Child Left Behind came out, were kind of dumbing down their standards, Minnesota took the opposite direction. Said, no, we want high expectations and strong standards. We want them to be clear, focused, etc. So we have been at the table with this common, with the states that are developing this Common Core. What the guidelines say is that the Common Core that is eventually developed has to be 85% of whatever our standards are. So we have the discretion then to also add another 15% to that, that would be the Minnesota version. We think that they will be very highly aligned with what we have now. And I have said, you know, if they are dumbed down, if they're not good, we need to then reconsider what we're going to be doing in the future. But that will be one of the first things that we will be having to look at. But then again, that goes back to the preparation of teachers in the schools. We have to make sure that they are preparing our kids for what they need to be teaching. Then once they exit that preparation program and enter, we want to have an induction process for those teachers so they're supported. We want to have more clinical even in the preparation, but then we want to have a strong induction. Then with the licensure, you ask the question, why this tiered licensure? Mm-hmm. We are saying we're not really changing the licensure process much.
I should clarify. I support tiered licensure. I really think Master Teacher is a huge positive addition, so I don't disagree with that. I'm wondering, how do they align? It seems like there should be some coherent philosophy of how they all tie together. And
well, that's what I'm trying to say, that you know, once they're prepared, the induction process should continue to look at what they need to be doing, what a teacher needs to be doing in the classroom. So the licensure process will establish the rubric of the expectation of what a beginning teacher should be demonstrating in the classroom. So for that 3 years of probationary period, they will be continually honing their skill to meet the criteria that the Board of Teaching and Higher Ed and the teachers in our state will work together to develop. So what does that, you know, professional teacher, you know, that provisional license that you would get, what are the things that you need to be doing that eventually after the 3 years you can demonstrate? And then, of course, the employment decision is still up to the superintendent in the local school district. We're not going to, you know, make those tenure decisions. That's a local decision. But just the licensure, what you need to do to get that professional license is very important, because then it is still all linked with our standards and what we're expecting our students to know. So you want to be able to make sure that new teacher is able to deliver effective reading strategies and math, etc., if they're in elementary, if they're a secondary, their particular subject area. So there'll be subject area evaluations and rubrics that will be developed. It'll be a long process. It's not going to happen overnight. It'll be very transparent, you know, with the review and comment of rulemaking. But that's how that link gets put in place. Then once a teacher has their professional license, then we have the continuing professional development and support all through their career, so that they're continually using the data about their kids. We're looking at the goals that we've set, our aspirational goals and our moral goals and our stretch goals that we need for our kids to make sure that all kids are moving towards achievement. And then we're going to have additional support for those high-need schools, for those children that come in with lots of additional needs and support, so that we have a really strong cadre of teachers in there that have the kind of skills and the desire and the willingness to be in those schools, which gets also to diversity issues. One of the things that I feel really passionate about is that we also need to have some recruitment strategies and some other things in place, which we do have in our application. We're going to have some actually grant opportunities for organizations to also help us with recruiting strategies to get a more diverse population of teachers into the classroom. So all of these things are tied together and linked as you go through the continuum. Strategies for how you recruit, just your human resource management, you know, trying to hire teachers earlier in the spring instead of waiting until the summertime. You know, making sure that, you know, we are watching that. Actually analyzing the preparation programs, too, because one of the data elements in the longitudinal data system is to also give feedback to the preparation program about that probationary teacher. How are they doing? And maybe X school has a number of, a cohort of graduates that are not doing well teaching math. Feed that back to the preparation program and say, you know, your math training is not, you know, hitting the mark. So let's try to work on that. Here's the feedback from the superintendents that have worked with those
Excuse
teachers.
Me, I'm just going to cut in because I think, you know, other than other members may have questions, yeah, too, besides myself. I'm particularly interested in enhanced QComp and then the tiered, you know, how you go from one layer to the other, and then both, how do they relate to test scores? I'm, you know, concerned, as you know, that some of this is being assigned to the Board of Teaching when usually big, huge topics start in the legislature with a discussion and then get the details get implemented through the Board of Teaching. So I'd like to focus on the QComp and the role of test scores in that and tenure. And Jim Dabney, Representative Dabney, did you have a question to follow up on that or something different?
Paying my full attention to you, Madam.
I thought I saw your inkling with your hand. No, I'm dreaming. Was it you?
Oh, I have a question on Common Core.
Okay, why don't you ask that first?
One of the things that I'm trying to that I'm wrestling with is sort of the timing with this. My understanding is that in order to be eligible for Race to the Top, a state has to agree to participate, adopt. So help me out here. Adopt the Common Core standards, which are being developed as we speak, with 48 states, I believe, that are participating, including us, in that process. And so maybe you can just quickly tell us sort of what the timing of that is. Mm-hmm. Does the mere fact that we're applying for a grant imply that we're going to adopt the Common Core? It seems to me that the Common Core standards really can't be adopted unless there's some kind of legislative action, because we've created the standards legislative here. So help us out with you know, the timing of when all that is supposed to happen. Should we be gearing up right now for this legislative session in order to make a change to our standards consistent with the Common Core? My guess is that the discussion is probably going to extend beyond this legislative session. How do we deal with that?
Commissioner Seeger.
Representative Mariani. yes, that's a good question. The timeline that we originally were given by the U.S. Department of Education was that the expectation was that the states that were working on the Common Core would have a draft completed by the end of January. I don't think that is going to happen. I think that may be extended. However, the deadline that they have set for the adoption of the Common Core, regardless of when they finally get us a final draft, is August. And because of that, your question is well taken, that for us, we usually do a rulemaking process. You know, we would be doing a revision of our math and a revision of our English language arts. And that process is we come to you after we've had a team of teachers do the revision. You review that, and then we go on and we do rulemaking. And our rulemaking, of course, takes, what, Representative Grayling, 15 months or so.
could go on for 3 years or more.
Well, yeah, it could. We hope that wouldn't happen. But it's a lengthier time. We would not get rulemaking done by August unless we had some kind of really expedited rulemaking authority. So we would come to you, and it probably won't be until April, or it could be May, it could be right at the 1st of May, that we would say, we finally got the standards, because we're also going to have to, once we get them, look at our standards and how they align, then we'd have to tweak ours if we need to, then come to you, say, here's what we've got, here's what we advise is they're good, et cetera, give you that review process, and then you would have to adopt them in law. And then we could still go through rulemaking to put all of the tweaks. But Ms. Larson has participated in that. Remember when we did the state adoption and had the register, that kind of process, we'd probably do that same process that we did a few years ago to get this done. But that's what the criteria is. So we would have to adopt by August. So we would come to you and we would need that legislative approval.
Representative Mariani.
But I want other questions to, or other members to have questions. Just a quick observation that doesn't give us a whole lot of time. April, May is our busiest time
it
here.
It does, and it worries me too. But that I want to give you a heads up.
Commissioner Seeger, if you could please go through the chair.
I'm sorry.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to possibly new standards, and then in complementary to that, the money that would come from the federal government, the way that this is written is, does that money get used to write the new standards and to look to see which ones we already have and which ones we need to change, or does that money flow to the school districts for them to implement new standards?
Commissioner Seegren.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, the way the Race to the Top will work is when we actually adopt the standards, then there will be a lot of implementation things that districts will need to do. We plan on writing curricular frameworks around the standards like we did in 2003 to help teachers with knowing how that they can align their curriculum with the new standards. So that will be some things that the state will be paying for to help the teachers. We will have training for the teachers around the new standards. We'll be using our math and science academies, and we will be doing the same thing with English language arts. We'll be having training around those. So there'll be a lot of implementation dollars that that the state will be providing for districts so that they'll be prepared when the new standards are eventually implemented. The implementation will, you know, be like we usually have our implementation. You need to, you know, look at all your curriculum alignment. You need to have that preparation legally before you can even assess. You need to make sure that the students have proper preparation time. So even when we're looking at the assessments, that will be down the road probably 3 years before we'd actually do. So we'll have a transition plan from what we're doing now to that, but there will be support through Race to the Top to get all of that done. We also, as I alluded to, we would like to develop, not only we'll have to develop a summative, that will be, you know, a group of, that's the $350 million that the federal government is going to give to these consortium of states, that will develop summative, formative tests, all sorts of kinds of additional multiple measures that will be on the table. So we will want to participate in that. In Race to the Top, we are proposing that any LEA that participates, when we get the formative assessments developed, we will pay for the use of those so that they have that more just-in-time test that they can use during the school year to inform their instruction, in addition to having the summative. So some of this, we may save money as we're in a consortium on, like, test item bank, that kind of thing, so that we can put more money into others. Being in a consortium of states does save money in some of the development costs. The actual administration of the test, you know, you still have to do that with a local vendor and work with them. So you do still have costs in the actual testing. But for the formative, we're proposing to, well, the summative we pay for too. But we would propose that any LEA that joins the Race to the Top will get that paid for. All districts will have to participate, but those that are in Race to the Top will get theirs paid for.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. As you remember, last legislative session, I authored a bill that would just put a moratorium on new standards because that was what my school district was asking from me, because obviously no new funding, and to implement new standards, that's a cost to the school districts. that they just feel like they just don't have right now. Mm-hmm. And so that are our school districts going to see this as another unfunded mandate?
No, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, as I said,
Seagram.
The race to the top, what we've got built into our standards and assessment assurance, when we start to implement and adopt the standards, we will be paying for a lot of professional development, curriculum alignment. As I said, the frameworks that will help teachers align their curriculum. We're going to have a lot of training for teachers for the implementation. So they won't have to do this by themselves and do all of this hard work of aligning their curriculum alone, and each district doing that one district at a time. This will be something that the state will come alongside the districts and the teachers and support them as we're implementing this. And that's one of the nice things about Race to the Top, is the fact that we have the ability to set aside money to do that kind of work as we're looking at the standards development. And so it will not be an unfunded mandate.
Commissioner Seagren, will there be that kind of help for all the districts that if they're not participating?
Madam Chair, some of the work will flow out, I'm sure, to all of the LEAs just because of the way things will be set up. But the LEAs that are participating in Race to the Top will get the benefit of, as I said, payment of a formative assessment. We plan on having an RFP and probably having two or three vendors that could be chosen by a district to be used for a formative assessment. We will be providing all of the technical support for them, training the teachers to do all of that. So that will be the benefit of being a part of the Race to the Top.
But the districts that don't get the money, do they have to do those six tests anyway? And how do they pay for that?
The six assurances, but if we adopt the standards and we implement them, they will have to implement them too. The benefit of Race to the Top will be that they will have the additional support by the state.
And that's been, you know, one of the concerns I've had is that all districts have to do a lot of this, but only some of them get the money with which to do it. Speaking of the vendors, you mentioned that there'd probably be two or three. I wish that would be a small change you could put in the application. I would seriously ask for that, because in the actual draft that I read, it says 1-3, 1-3, and I really think one would not be a great idea for our state now, that the department would just pick one. A lot of the districts are using NWEA, others are doing other things, and then what if the department picked, for instance, Pearson, and then everybody had to switch gears? And, you know, I just think it's a healthier thing if there's some competition in our state. So if you changed it to three, I'd be thrilled.
Madam Chair,
Commissioner Seagren,
I will take that under advisement. I have been saying 2-3. Vendors. Mm-hmm. And so if it says 1-3, we can certainly designate that it has to be a minimum of 2.
That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll be.
Thank you. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question, Commissioner, is piggybacking on the issue that's just been raised on formative and summative assessment. And my concern is about sort of the relationship between top-down and bottom-up kinds of processes. And I know you're very well aware, having been a school board member and having headed an educational committee and so forth, that Minnesota is based on a strong dialogue between grassroots input and, you know, more administrative, executive, legislative input. And the question I have is, we have districts who have been very actively involved in a lot of these processes for a number of years, maybe 10 to 15 years, doing some variations on formative assessments and using that data over time to drive their own decision-making, their own curricular alignment, et cetera. What effort will we make as a state when we're coming more from the top down, because that's sort of the nature of this process, to assess the work that's already been done, to look on a research base, be data-driven about the success that those districts are having with the methods they're using before we try to impose, you know, different systems. My issue there is we may actually defeat some very successful systems over time in order to have common practice across the state. Right. So how will we proceed to assess that?
Commissioner Seagren.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a very good and very thoughtful question. Our intent would not be to diminish the work that's been established in districts, particularly if maybe a district has developed their own unique formative assessment process. what we have done, we've tried to do, I think, in the RFP, and I'd have to go back and look at it again. But I think what we tried to do is reflect kind of the broad principles of what a formative assessment should look like, and what are the kind of the things that you would want to have in that. If you're saying that there's maybe a couple of districts out there that have developed their own very unique system, maybe what we would do is say that you don't have to use, I wouldn't think you would say you'd have to use that, but you would want to, and because the formative would not be used for any measures of statewide, we wouldn't be doing that. So I would think that if you wanted to choose to use your own assessment system that you had developed in, the formative area, that could happen. I think what we're trying to do is give every district the ability to, just have something that they could use and have access to, because we have a lot of districts that don't have anything.
Representative Briner. Yeah.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, that really helps clarify for me, because I'm hearing from you a level of flexibility in the application of the broader vision to the particulars of the district. And from my perspective, that's really critical to honor the work that's been done in district, especially if they have a body of data to support their practice.
Madam Chair, and that would be very important, especially if you do have a lot of good, strong trend data that you've been using. It's been aligned to the standards. You've developed it. I wouldn't personally want to see that dismantled and that work. What we're trying to do, though, is just set up an RFP process because of the request to have formative types of assessments. I agree with Representative Greiling, Madam Chair, that we need to have some competition in it and have some choice for districts to be able to do what they want to do with their district. But there would be not an intention to destroy the work of a district. It's not linked to, anything but trying to get best practices and that quick feedback.
Representative Blythe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Siever and I have a couple of questions. When looking at the group of stakeholder lists, there was one group that I was surprised not to see on the list, and that was the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, which for years have been working on innovative programs and working with students to help them overcome falling behind. And I was curious as to why they're there. And
thank you. Did you hear my question?
I did.
Okay, thank you. And the second question, actually, I have reservations about the whole notion that the legislature and government bodies can determine what standards are best to learn. And in fact, I have questions about standardized education in general. And I'm a teacher, and my experience as a teacher is that there is a give and take in learning, and there's great benefit in as a teacher in developing your skills, working with students and learning from them as well. And I am somewhat glad to hear the comments that you made to Representative Briner's question, but I'm still concerned about the whole notion of are we really heading down the right path by looking at more standardization and calling that reform? I'm concerned about that.
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, and I will take your advisement about the alternative learning center groups. We certainly don't want to exclude anybody, and we do also want to get serious feedback from them, and they would be a very important group. There may have been representatives on the stakeholders group that weren't identified, particularly within ALC, but I will really look into that and make sure that we touch base with them and make sure that, particularly if there's some turnaround strategies or things that we need to consider, that we will do that. We try to think of every group, and that's, I apologize for that, and we will try to get some feedback on that. Standardization versus local, or however you want to characterize it, I think that debate will continue to go on. I think we're trying to strike a balance of supporting specific number of subject areas. I think the federal government is, that we feel are core to any child's knowledge, but we don't want to diminish our change our liberal arts philosophy in the United States either, and I certainly don't want to in the state of Minnesota. So I think we have tried to strike that balance. The criteria on Race to the Top drives a lot of this application process. But to the extent that we continue to ask those questions and say, you know, let's make sure that the innovation and the creativity and the exposure to many, many broader opportunities is very important. And I would hope that we would continue to have keep having that pushback because it is important.
Well, now your time is almost up, but I would like to get back to the QComp and the tiered licensure in terms of the change to significant role for the test scores. As you know, and I know, and other people that were here at the time know, that was a big brouhaha at the legislature, and the Senate worked on having very defined containment of the test score so that it wasn't a huge significant factor. It was a major factor, but many other factors. Last year we passed multiple measures so that we could be sure to have more ways to evaluate students besides just the student growth and evaluate schools. And now we have this application, you know, having a more of a role for test scores, going back to that granted value added, but still more of a role. And I'm wondering, but we never, anything I've read, and I read quite a bit here, I can't quite get to what does that significant mean? Does it mean 75%? Or what is the role for test scores in enhanced QComp that seems to be tied to the licensure progression as well?
All right, Commissioner Segrin. Let me sort the things out for you. When you're talking about significant, that is in the criteria language. Mm-hmm. Now, the way we've interpreted in significant is we are continuing to have our QCOM process as it is, locally developed with teachers and management. And so the enhanced part of QCOM is talking about including principals now in the program, and then also enhancing the QCOM program by developing a state rubric or evaluation rubric that districts could choose to use if they wish, or develop their own locally established evaluation rubric. So those are the enhancement parts to QComp. We have not done anything with saying that there has to be a larger percentage that's attached to student achievement, pay for performance. That is still a locally developed option. We have not changed that, and I think there's been a lot of confusion about that. The criteria in Race to the Top says demonstrates significant. Mm-hmm. We have said that we believe that in QComp we need a comprehensive multiple measuring system to measure teachers' ability and effectiveness. And so we have multiple measures in there, and we're not changing that process at all. It's still going to be locally negotiated as to what those breakouts are going to be. The enhancements are that principals are going to be in there and evaluated and trained to be evaluators. We're also going to provide the third one, too, is also more extensive training for all those districts that are in QComp. We will have more training for the evaluation process, and we will also be establishing even a core of evaluators. Let's say if you have a number of small school districts that maybe don't have enough staff to do the kind of evaluation, they'd be able to bring in an evaluator from this core. So those are the enhancements for QComp. We are not changing anything else.
Okay, so I was confused about that. I know it was part of the application that test scores need to be a significant part of it. And in my mind, with current law, they already are a significant part of it. So I didn't see the guidelines as having to have QComp be changed at all. I understand superintendents are being added. I see the, principals. Well, I think superintendents should be added too. Maybe Superintendent Kite or Executive Director Kite can comment on that. That would be another suggestion of mine for the application, actually. But and then the training. But I had misunderstood. I thought that with what I read, that the districts that had QComp already would have to renegotiate to some higher standard of enhancement. So the districts that already have QComp under current law don't have anything left to do, anything different to do other than add in their principals.
They would have to add in their principals. And if they chose, if they wanted to take the state evaluation rubric instead of the one that they're using now, maybe they feel like it's not sufficient. They could choose to do that, which then might cause some renegotiation, at the local level. But they just have to incorporate the principals into their QCOM model. Many of the QCOM districts already do that. But they also have to evaluate. They also have to have the evaluation process for their principals, too. And so that those are the enhancements with QCOM. And
so then, let me get this straight. Let me have you say this one more time. So districts like mine, all have QCOM, would have to do nothing to change other than add principals.
If they didn't have principals, they'd have to add that. And then if they wanted to choose any of the other, you know, training opportunities, we would want them to go through additional training, you know, of their evaluators. We want to make sure that that is something that's implemented well. But otherwise, no. The way I understand the application, we're not doing anything with that.
And what then is the role of test scores in licensure? I know it's going through the Board of Teaching, and if you don't know the answer, this will be a segue into having Karen Ballmer come up, unless other people have questions of you. But from your understanding, what's the role of test scores in
the reflection of QCOM, Madam Chair, is only in that third tier of master license. So that right now, many QCOM districts use master teachers, et cetera, for working with their colleagues, working on instructional practices, modeling those, doing the research, et cetera. So you would have a master license that would be a transferable license so that anybody who was hired in a district that would have that master teacher licensure would be able to come in and do that kind of work. So that would be developed by the Board of Teaching to kind of fit that kind of responsibility in a QCOM district or any district if you wanted to use that. A teacher on special assignment, if they're having those particular kind of duties, you would have that kind of criteria and standard developed. Other than that, that's the only influence of QCOM with the licensure. And Madam Chair, did you ask another question?
I was wondering about Commissioner Seegren, the role of test scores in the licensure, going from being a probationary to a continuing, for instance.
The role of the of student achievement and how teachers affect that would be a portion of your probationary period, and would be also something that would be part of your continuing licensure too. But that's where maybe Karen Ballmer can kind of talk more about that. But that's again part of the requirement that you have some linkage to that. How that is handled would be up to the Board of Teaching and the folks that would start to develop that evaluation rubric or those standards for effective practice. I would suspect that it would be, again, a portion of an evaluation. It would be something that would use a growth model. That's also what we use in QCOM. We encourage that to have a growth standard so that that's a fair effect, if you will, a value-added effect. So, but maybe Ms. Ballmer can give you a little bit more insight into what their process will be.
Very good. I have one last question, and then Representative Tilbury and Representative Dabney. My last question is, I'm looking at page 34 in the application, and here's where I still need some clarification, I guess. You said that the districts that I have wouldn't have to do anything different. They wouldn't have to renegotiate their QCOMP, and they could just add principals and accept extra training. But I'm looking at page 34, strategy, overview, improving effectiveness based on performance, ensure more consistent, supportive, and rigorous teacher and principal evaluations by enhancing QCOMP for participating LEAs. Then under details, the second to the last bullet, it says, participating LEAs currently in QCOMP will be grandpersoned in. I love that, grandpersoned in instead of grandfathered in. Whoever wrote that, kudos to them. Will be grandfathered in, or grandpersoned in, based on current applications, and then there's this big but, though. But we'll need to meet enhanced race to the top expectations by 2012.
No one else has this page now.
Yeah. Oh, they're all looking for it.
I'll let you know.
Oh, okay. Minnesota race to the top. Do we not have that? Everybody doesn't have it?
It's half page.
Oh, you have different pages. It's on page 17, Representative Downey said. Okay, let me go to page 17 and re-ask my question. Once I get an old version, and I've put my notes on it, that's actually not the page I'm looking at.
No, there have to be ones. 34.
So if we go to page 35, the top of 35 is page 34.
Okay, we'll try again. Representative Downey, gong for you, but Representative Depke has it. But where is this in here? Okay.
Oh, we all were.
Which one are you? But you got
all. And no one else has it. Okay. Okay. All right. Don't just listen then, and don't try to. No one else apparently has this whole working draft that I have, and I actually was told that it was confidential. And when was I supposed to be able to talk about it? Was it today? Let's pretend that it was. Okay. Okay, this is a working draft, Minnesota Race to the Top, and it's one that I got as the one that's likely to be the one, and you said that nothing was really going to change in it before the districts actually got to sign on. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me it's in conflict with what you just said, and I hope that what you just said is right and not how I'm interpreting this. So let me read it to people who don't have it at all in front of you. But it's on enhancing QComp. And it says, participating local education authorities currently in QComp will be grand personed in based on current applications, but then there's this but. But we'll need to meet enhanced Race to the Top expectations by 2012. Does that mean that we won't be adding in the principals until 2012 and getting the training? Or what does that mean? Commissioner Seeger.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, and I did forget a couple of other things for the enhancement, and so let me clarify that too. Now, any QComp district that's in Race to the Top now, if they've already, settled their contracts and their QComp, whatever, then they have until their next contract to do the enhanced. So the listing here, the details for the enhanced would be the principals, adding the principals to QComp, having a set requirement for training of evaluators, and that's in your thing. I'm going to read this to you guys. Strengthen and tailor professional development based on, so the professional development, if you are measuring their professional practice right now, many of the QComp districts have like a three division. It might be not proficient, partially, and exemplary. We want to kind of expand that to have a more differentiated, so have a five-level proficiency, and that is also directed by the criteria in the Race to the Top. And then also, this has really been driven by both Minneapolis and St. Paul. They have really strong peer assistance review processes. So if you do have a teacher who's struggling, there is a peer assistance review process that you can have a teacher go through where they can be supported, and if they have some areas of weakness, that they can be strengthened. But we also wanted to also flip it, too, and say if you are maybe a teacher that's coming back from sabbatical, maybe you haven't been teaching for a while, or maybe you're going to transition from elementary to middle school, and you'd like to have some peer assistance in transitioning to that. So it's also the positive of, I need some additional support as I'm going into kind of a new level of teaching. So enhancing that. Many of our QComp districts have that peer assistance already. So it's just kind of expanding that and making sure that you've got a robust peer assistance review. And then to ensure only effective teachers are granted tenure in the first place, clarify, and that's actually just make sure that it's understood, this is already in law, that you should have some kind of an evaluation process for your probationary teachers, and that is required in law now before they can become tenured. It doesn't change what's happening with tenure, it's still a local decision, but make sure, clarify that when you have those probationary teachers that there's an evaluation process in place. And you can use the QComp evaluation process that you've developed, if you to do that.
Well, but Commissioner Segrin.
But that's
so
the only thing.
Go back then.
Yeah.
This is not clarifying this for me.
Yeah.
I asked originally about my district and mm-hmm. my districts, all that are participating in QComp, and you said they would not need to do anything different but training, adding teacher or adding principals. Now you're saying they would go from three levels of paying teachers to
no,
five.
No, not paying teachers, Madam Chair. Levels of proficiency. So in your evaluation rubric, you need to make sure that you've got some tiers of proficiency that are very clear that you're moving through as you're being evaluated, not
okay. Not how they're paid. So how does that relate to test score? Because that's what I was particularly interested in, because we had that was what the legislative discussion was about, was the role of test scores compared to other things in determining what the teacher would, how they would be evaluated.
Madam Chair, that still would be a part of QCOM.
Well, Commissioner Segrin, if I could finish and if you could wait and be acknowledged. You've forgotten. You're not the chair. I am. You're the commissioner. But
Madam Chair, I keep forgetting that we're not friends. I'm just talking to.
I know it. It's hard for me, too. But anyway, so there's no change in the role of test scores for QCOM. Commissioner
Chair.
Segrin.
The role of student achievement linked to pay is still a negotiated process. The percentage of how you want to do that is still negotiated. The five levels of proficiency is referring to the evaluation rubric that is being used for teachers for their professional practice. So, say the Charlotte Danielson model may have three levels of proficiency. The way the criteria is being written is that we want to have a more distinct kind of levels, if you will, to really show and demonstrate that teachers have levels that they are meeting, that you can truly distinguish between proficiency of teachers. And so the proposal was to have a more discrete, I guess, evaluation rubric instead of a more yes, no. Alice, you know, is or is not, but that there is a more discrete movement in an evaluation rubric that really demonstrates that they, you know, are doing the things they need professionally. So those are the things that if QComp districts, some of them may have already done that. It's just whatever the things, a lot of them already have a peer assistance review, but if there are things that they need to tweak, they have to their next contract to do that.
Representative Tilbury, and then Representative Dabney.
And so, Madam Chair, I want to apologize. I forgot. I try to remember all the little details of this, and I was thinking of just the two big ones of the.
Thank you. To me, this one's it's a big one. It's, you know, part of what the controversy swirls around. So, but I can see where there's a lot to it. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. We talked about participating schools in QComp. What about the school districts that don't participate in QComp, and what does that do? And what kind of equity type plan would that be throughout? And then I have one question, since you brought up Charlotte Danielson's evaluation piece. Since Roseville District happens to participate under the QComp piece but has the Danielson model, then would that be a change that they would have to make?
Commissioner,
so those are two questions that I'm looking at.
Madam Chair and Representative Tilbury, to the extent that the Charlotte Danielson model reflects, you know, kind of a five-tiered proficiency standard, that would be fine. Maybe they want, the Charlotte Danielson would need to be tweaked a little bit. I just don't have all the details of the Charlotte Danielson and how many levels of proficiency are provided within her rubric. She's got a pretty extensive rubric. And your other question was?
Representative Tilbury.
My other questions, Madam Chair, were what about the particular school districts that do not participate in QComp right now? Because we've been talking about how this will affect QComp people in their particular districts, but what about ones that don't participate?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, if you choose not to participate in Race to the Top, and that means that if you want to participate, you have to agree to develop a QComp program and apply for QComp. If you don't want to do that, if you choose not to, if the district does not want to participate, then They don't have to, but then they can't participate in Race to the Top. It's one of the assurances that you have to meet for Race to the Top.
Madam Chair, one more question. The process to become a QCOMP particular school district is not so easy. I mean, that is a difficult process. So how long would it take for someone to be able to get to the Race to the Top if they have to go through that step also? And is it an advantage for the school districts that are already in QCOMP? And then we have a whole equity question.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Tilbury, if you choose to participate in Race to the Top, you also have to choose to work towards creating a QCOMP application. So what we did, realizing that QCOMP, as you said, the application is quite involved and it takes time to develop, we have said that you have until July 1st of 2012 to send in an application for Race to the Top. If you're approved, then you will be in QCOMP and you will receive the money and you will continue to be in Race to the Top. If you turn in your application and it's a weak application or, it's really, you decided to just game the system for a couple of years and whatever, then you won't be able to continue in Race to the Top any longer if the application is not approved. But we are already seeing, very strong interest all throughout the state of Minnesota in signing the Memorandum of Understanding, which would include making a commitment to join the QCOMP school districts. So that's kind of how we address that situation. We know that it's a serious undertaking, and we want districts to be given the time to do it thoughtfully. They will have access to monies under Race to the Top once they sign on for planning and for the support, and we also plan for our department to provide a lot of technical assistance to districts to help them with their application. And again, Representative Greiling had asked the question about kind of the enhancements for QCOMP. One of those that we've heard a lot from small rural districts is, golly, we don't have all of the staff and the expertise to create an evaluation rubric, which is a strong part of the QCOMP process. And so that's why we're proposing a group of teachers and other experts get together to do a statewide optional evaluation rubric that they could just take and use in their district. So at the same time, that we want to start developing very quickly so that would be something available within a very short time frame.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I left the last hearing on this where you were not present, disturbed by the department's approach. And I believe I was not the only member who shared that experience. The concern then was that, bluntly, the department was dismissive of the achievement gap in Minnesota. The documents that we've been provided by the department tonight seem to me to be kind of a Lake Wobegon application where, gosh darn it, we're good and we're just going to keep being good, when, in fact, we know that for too many of our kids and a growing number of our kids, mm-hmm. that's not the experience that they're having. I look at the memorandum of agreement, and to me where the rubber meets the road is turning around high-performing schools. And I find that is the shortest part of the work plan. It's one element, half a page in a 22-page document. What I see between the lines of the materials is a lot of happy bureaucrats developing new standards and new ways of innovating or new ways of evaluating and the like. What I don't see is much attention paid to actual students and to what is needed for them to learn. There's some oblique references to extended time funding for schools that are in the turnaround, but I don't see where the funding is coming from. And I don't see how that mechanism is tripped. I don't see any reference to limited English proficiency students when we know that many of the most challenged schools and students are challenged because they're coming out of situations where English is not what's being spoken at home. And I don't see the department putting on the table reversing the decision that, if I remember correctly, was made under your chair of this committee to limit LEP funding to an amount that was not consistent with any research or experience on what's needed to bring those kids up to the standards that we want all kids to be at. This last session, this legislature reaffirmed dual enrollment, and the federal guidelines affirm dual enrollment, and yet our application does not reference dual enrollment and instead focuses only on AP and IB. In my district, there's a dual enrollment class that's implemented successfully that specifically works on college writing skills for limited English proficiency students, tailored specifically to that population. And yet in the department's vision, there's no place for that specific, tailored, successful program. I don't see the district's ability to charter to be in here so that we can benefit from the promise of innovation that charters provide, but with greater transparency and accountability that we lack under our current charter system. That would be the exact sort of move that would strengthen this application, because President Obama and Secretary Duncan come from a place where only districts can charter. And I'm concerned that there's not the vision and the leadership in Lake Wobegon to successfully not just do the application, but successfully lead innovation and break out innovation for closing the achievement gap.
Madam Chair.
Mr. C.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, in regard to your chartering option, already in our state law, we allow school districts to charter. So that is a strategy that is allowed under the turnaround schools, and it is one of the strategies that's listed under our Race to the Top criteria, and it is included in our application. I wasn't at the last meeting, you are right, but you know that I've had a strong commitment. If there was a signal that I, as a commissioner, or as our department, does not care about the lowest performing students, then I want to set the record straight that I deeply care about it. I am frustrated. I hate every time I get on the radio or TV and we are talking about our high ACT scores, but alas, the achievement gap is still there. I want to do everything that I can to come alongside and assist our schools that are really low performing and help the students. We're looking at community strategies. We're looking at sort of the Harlem model. There's language in our Race to the Top about not only looking at extended time, but how do we engage communities? How do we engage parents? We got some grants, some LEA or SEA grants that we're going to use to Race to the Top to put on the table to try to incent some of that more innovative support around that. You talked about myself as chair reducing the ELL funding. I want to tell you, Representative Dabney, that was not my position. Our position was not to do that, but the Senate's position was to reduce it to 5 years. I did not want to do that as chair, and I believe, as you do, that it should not have a restriction to it. But unfortunately, in conference committee, that was the decision that was made over my objections. So I agree with you that that should be something that is done. That is a funding issue, however, that impacts more than Race to the Top at this point. So we have, you know, some very serious fiscal issues that we have to deal with, too. But even given those constraints, our support, and I hope that you probably don't have a full application, full language before you at this point, but we will try to get you more detail about our turnaround strategies. We're trying to be very comprehensive, use the best practices, look at what's happening nationally. We also have a scaling up initiative that we've been working on that's been provided by the federal government. How do we ramp up? How do we have an early identification system so that we catch kids before they drop out in high school? But what are the dropout prevention strategies? What are the things that we need to do in our lowest performing schools? And that does include our elementary, our middle, and our high schools. So I apologize, Representative Dabney, if the opinion was, or the impression was given that I don't care. I do care deeply. And I hope that our Race to the Top application will be strong enough. But I will take your criticisms very seriously, and we will go back, and we will look at our application to see if there are things that we can do to make it stronger. And, in fact, I will personally talk with you after and set up a meeting with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. If there are no further questions, thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll, no one else is going to get nearly as much time as Commissioner Segrin had, but we'll now call up Karen Ballmer, the Executive Director of the Board of Teaching. Welcome to the committee, and I'll give you the chance to, since the Board of Teaching is given some assignments in this application, we'll give you a chance to talk briefly about it and then see if members have questions.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair, and the other chairs and members. It's a pleasure to be here with you this evening. I think what I will do, as you've noted, Madam Chair, there are two primary places in the department's application where the Board of Teaching is referenced. So I think I'll make some brief comments about those two places in particular, and then open it up and stand for your questions and see where you'd like some additional information, if that's okay with you. Mm-hmm. The two primary areas are, they fall into the great teachers and leaders section of the application. The first area has to do with alternative routes to licensure, and the second primary area where we are referenced has to do with the tiering of the licensure structure itself, which you've had some good discussion about already this evening. So I think I'll start with the alternative routes and then provide some comments and then move to the second area. As you know, the idea of alternative routes, or also sometimes called alternative pathways to licensure, is not a new issue. It's not new to Minnesota. It is one that has been before this body for a number of years and has been a difficult one for this body and the legislature in general, the Senate, number of committees. And so I need to be very clear that the Board of Teaching is well aware of the fact that that this has been a legislative issue that is yet unresolved. We as a state agency do not have the authority to just do as we please, particularly in areas that are very controversial when we need to recognize our proper authority. And so I want to do that publicly this evening. The intent, then, of the Board of Teaching engaging this discussion is not to circumvent previous discussions or dialogue or debate. What I would propose to you would be to think about it as I have been thinking about it, and the board has begun to think about it in more recent days and months, that we wonder if there is a way to reframe and pull back from the discussion of alternatives versus traditional. And those are the two camps that we have talked about in recent years, and that's been difficult, and it is unresolved, and I think will continue to be very difficult. We wonder more and more whether there's a way that we can start thinking about licensure not in those terms of alternative and traditional, but rather in terms of what constitutes the core, what constitutes the essential elements for any preparation program, and in within that allow for some flexibility, and not just for programs that we typically think of as alternative. I'm hoping that we might broaden our thinking on this, and I'll give you a couple of concrete examples. We typically think of organizations like Teach for America as an alternative route, but what if we started thinking about some of the populations of potential teachers that we need to pull, but our system currently has barriers. Our state, the licensing system, has barriers. For example, we have some institutions in the northern part of the state that have strong relationships with Native American populations and communities. And what if we were to allow for some flexibility within parameters to try to engage groups and individuals and communities in new ways. What about in the urban areas, some of our universities and institutions that draw on populations of teacher candidates that for whom student teaching becomes a tremendous barrier, and we actually see them matriculating right out of a program because they're often first-generation college, they're people with children, they're people who cannot afford to lose income during student teaching and pay tuition at the same time. Are there ways that we can start thinking about the core essentials and elements for any preparation program? Can we start thinking more broadly? That's the kind of discussion we're interested in having. And so it's that piece of perhaps defining a core of essentials, some non-negotiables, those types of things, and this is a very important and, coupled with that, common measures to lay all programs next to one another for performance data so that no program, no matter who they're prepared, who they are, whether they're traditional or some kind of alternative, gets a free pass, but there are performance expectations held for all preparation programs that we could lay next to each other. That's the kind of work that the Board of Teaching is interested in doing and pursuing within our proper purview, of course, but that, I hope, provides a bit of context for the kinds of things that we have been talking about and thinking about at the Board of Teaching. I'll leave you with one, two more thoughts. One is a recent quote from a colleague who happens to be a higher education faculty member here in the Twin Cities area. And he said to me probably about 6 weeks ago, Karen, you, and I don't know that he meant this personally, but he said, you have conditioned the innovation right out of our DNA as teacher preparation institutions. We have become conditioned to check your boxes and to fill out your forms, and you've conditioned the innovation right out of our DNA. And I don't disagree. I think that we have some real opportunity and need to improve and work on those areas. So that is the type of dialogue that we have been engaging and hope to continue to engage with you, with others, with many stakeholders. And I'll leave with one final note that about specific to the Race to the Top application, and that is that the Board of Teaching has always had the position that whoever prepares teachers and recommends teachers for licensure in Minnesota must be a higher education institution. We have not gone the way of many states that say anyone can recommend people for licensure. That is not consistent with the guidelines in Race to the Top, and I think it's important, though, to note that we feel very confident with our higher education preparing institutions. We believe they're the right people for the job. We believe there's a great deal of room for us to allow for some greater degree of flexibility and innovation with them. But that is a stake that we have long had in the ground and I don't foresee changing in the near future. So that's, I don't know if you'd like me to stop there or maybe continue to the next area. Madam Chair, I'll
defer. Why don't you go ahead on the next area and then we'll see if there are questions. Thank you.
Okay. The second area that you likely noted and heard already this evening from the materials that you received that relate strongly to the Board of Teaching is this idea of tiering the licensure structure. This is not, again, a new idea for the Board of Teaching. We have, for many, many, many years, had the role and responsibility of providing rules for how teachers renew their licenses. Back 2 years ago, in the 2008-2009 school year, the Board of Teaching set as one of its goals to revisit and begin discussing license renewal requirements. We were starting to feel like, oh, this is an area we need to come back around to. Well, that was it was then last year that Representative Kath led the charge on reflective practices, and the discussion has grown. The board then in August renewed that commitment to talk about this issue, and they set as a goal again this year, more broad goal actually, to talk about the licensure structure in general. So this is not something that is brand new. It is not coming to us from the application. It's very much a conversation that we have wanted to engage and begun engaging on our own. And we've had a couple of workshops this fall to start talking about this and bringing stakeholders into the work with us. There are really two big ideas I want to leave you with in terms of why we would want to go down the road of creating tiers within the licensure structure. First of all, and you've talked about this, and you've heard about this from Commissioner Segrin already this evening, is this idea of a continuum of development for a teacher. Our current system has the same expectations in terms of licensure. The first time you renew that license, 5 years into the practice, as it does for that veteran, master, 25-year teacher. And there is no accommodation or acknowledgement in the current system of professional growth or changing needs to help spur and encourage professional growth and development of our teachers. And by their nature, many teachers choose high-quality professional development and do that on their own, and many districts are supporting them well, but our licensure structure doesn't require that. And that leads me to the second big idea that I'll try to illustrate this way. In our last workshop that we had just a number of weeks ago, we brought in just a couple of staff development directors and curriculum folks to kind of give the local flavor for what's happening in this area. And my question to those folks was, how do the licensing requirements, the clock hours that we require, how does that interact with or relate to what you do locally to grow your teachers, to support your teachers, to induct and mentor your new teachers? How do these two things interface? And unfortunately, the answer was, well, they don't. We just kind of do the licensing thing. And what I'm understanding is that many of our districts are doing a tremendous work locally to support and grow and develop their not even young always, but their new teachers. And further, they're providing leadership opportunities across that continuum of development, and they're providing different opportunities for teachers across the continuum. And my concern is that, and the growing concern of the board is that we've got two trajectories, and they're not talking to one another. And we think, for those reasons, that conversations about tiering the licenses, not for the purpose of extra hoops to jump through or extra paperwork or another $57 for the state when they reapply, not for any of those reasons, but for the reasons of having a cohesive, seamless system that recognizes that the various needs from the preparation of a teacher into that first license through their development and hopefully into what we would call a master teacher that you referenced earlier, Representative Greiling. So that is what underlies the kind of conversation that we're having these days. I'll make one other note, if I may, specific to your comment earlier, Chair Greiling, about a potential tie to employment, and that was an issue that came up at, I believe it was the last stakeholder meeting, and honestly, that's one that left us scratching our heads. At the Board of Teaching, that is not something we have done, tying a licensure decision to an employment decision. What I believe I heard Commissioner Segrin say this evening is that is not the intent, and so that certainly would be uncharted waters for us. But I wanted to follow up on that as my understanding of where that issue sits. So,
questions from members? Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we look forward to working with you during the session. Ms. Ballmer is very good about coming and communicating with us, and this is a topic where we definitely will want to communicate. And I just to throw this out here, and we won't have to discuss it now, and I told her I didn't want to get a reaction until she'd had a chance to think about it, but just so all members know, The Department of Education, when they do rulemaking, if it's something major, needs to come to the legislature and talk to us and get some say-so. The Board of School Administrators has a shorter rope than the Department of Education, whereas the Board of Teaching has always had open and standing generic rulemaking authority, but yet they've been now charged in this application with two big whopping topics that I think legislators would like to have a big role in. And so I am authoring a bill to have the Board of Teaching be on a par, not with the school administrators, because I think they're on quite a short rope, but the Department of Education. So that way there would be a full discussion of having some institutional way to have a role for legislators and not just have an agency promulgating rules without having gone through the normal procedure, which would be to start with the legislature.
No, that's fine.
Representative Solberg, that must have answered the question he was going to ask. Okay, very good. So just throw that out there. We don't need to discuss that yet, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Meeks, Executive Director of the School Board Association. Welcome. We don't usually see you.
Ms. Schwab
is up there, but we get the big gun today, huh? Not that she's not a big gun.
A few years since I've had this opportunity. Madam Chair, thank you, members of the committee. My name is Bob Meeks. I'm on the staff of the School Board Association, and I spent about 25 years up here doing this, so it's kind of nice, well, not really, to be back. I'm going to make some general comments and then hopefully answer any questions you may have. But the School Board Association does support Minnesota application for the Race to the Top program that President Obama has proposed. And I'll tell you, I don't like competitive grant programs. I don't think that's the route to go, but that's the game we've been given. That's what we were told. Mm-hmm. Now, the department has done a good job, I think, putting together a stakeholders group. They may have forgot one or two groups there, but hopefully they will pick up on that. But we've had a lot of opportunity. Madam Chair, you've sat there. Mm-hmm. Representative Mariani, you've sat there, had a lot of opportunity to give input and to see what of our ideas were taken. Now, in regards to our membership, we took a little bit different approach than some of the other associations. We didn't send out a memo to our members saying do this or don't do this. We didn't recommend getting in, we didn't recommend getting out. What we did do, we sent out a memo, an email emergency, and it happened to fall during our summer seminar, so we had quite a few of our members in town. And by the way, I'm going to be speaking to over 90% of our chairs a week from today at our convention. One of the topics we'll be discussing is this. But we did send out a strong recommendation that the school board put together a team. Administrators, teacher, union leadership, other employees, parents, and citizens and students if possible, to attend one of the four webinars that the department put on and one of the area meetings. Because what we did recommend is that each board sit down and have discussions and reach consensus, an informed decision whether or not to get in. Now, one of the reasons I think that I feel so strongly about this, even though I don't like competitive programs, is President Obama has given us a chance to get some funding. And that funding is going to be based on what the locals want to do, based on a local decision of getting in or out. Yes, there are some things. The data acquisition is something that, as part of the P16, P20 now group, I was involved in that subcommittee that started putting this together 3 or 4 years ago. And it happened to fit in well with Race to the Top. The standards, that there's more than one cow out of that door. The whole herd has left that barn on standards. And that's where we're going. We try to, for accountability purposes, the states determine that we need some state standards that districts need to meet. So, yes, there are some things that districts will have to do if they don't join. But the major part of this program is a local decision. A lot of work's gone into this by members sitting at this table, members behind me, and citizens around the state. But there's a lot more to do. If we get the money, then the districts have to sit down and decide, well, they'll decide a little bit ahead of time, but it'll be based on if we get the money, whether or not they want to get in. And I don't know, with all due respect, knowing what we know about the state budget, how we can sit down and just turn our noses away from $175 million. We, as you know, certainly don't need to tell you what we're coming into as a legislative session. And Representative Carlson, Representative Solberg, and Madam Chair, and the Speaker, and Minority Leader Zellers, we hope you work together and get us some money during some very tough times, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But the local decision is going to be there to give some help to kids. And that's what this is all about. It's about the students, and we got to remember that. It's not about the employees. It's not about the school board. It's not about the state. It's about what we can do to help the kids. And, Madam Chair, you asked about the achievement gap. And I'm with Commissioner Siegrin on this. I'm embarrassed. And as I said, I've spent a lot of years here working with you and working with school boards. And it's something that I think we got to address. The problem is this is just one small part of that pie. The race to the top is one small part. We've got other things going on, such as Senator Franken's bill that he's introduced to strengthen our recruitment and training of principals. Well, President Obama today announced a new $250 million plan to strengthen science and math teaching. The ESEA is up for reapproval, reauthorization at the federal level. And most importantly, our major funding comes from you. So if we're going to address the budget or the achievement gap, we need you. And we need all the parts of the pie, and this is one of them. So, Madam Chair, based on this being a local decision, this being the only game in town right now that we're aware of, and based on working, and this will not work, I'm going to tell you right now, if the employees don't want to do this, there's no use us even going forward in an individual district. This should not be adversarial. We should be working with our employees, with parents, with residents, and with students to find consensus to go forward if we want to go forward. If we don't, then we don't. We can't force this on anybody, nor can the employees force it on the board. So based on that, Madam Chair, I will be writing a letter to the commissioner after approval of my board, which will support Minnesota's application for Race to the Top funding revenue. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Meeks. Any questions? Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nice to have you here today, Mr. Meeks. I've had the privilege of working with Bob in the School Board Association for a number of years, so I appreciate his experience in the legislature and any advice he has to offer. But more of a comment, and I'd like to hear your reflections on it. You know, I appreciate your position that we need to look for funding where we can find it. And you know, I too agree that this is an opportunity not only for funding but for supporting some real reform efforts that already are moving forward in our state. I think our concern here, though, Mr. Meeks, as we raise some of these issues, is to be a little more thoughtful this side of the game than we were with No Child Left Behind. When you have a federal initiative, as much as it may, its intent may be to support states in their efforts, because it is a top-down effort, it can have the result of really squelching initiative instead of supporting it, because we're stuck with all sorts of mandated structures. So I think a lot of the questions we're trying to raise is how to shape this in a way that honors the traditions in Minnesota of independent school districts, where we really do honor that grassroots involvement. And I'd like you to reflect on that issue in relation to your experience with school districts over the years.
Mr. Meeks.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Breiter, I don't want to get myself in trouble, so I'm going to just settle back a little bit and just react. There's nobody in this room that detests top-down more than I do. But we have a president that has, with his secretary, has come forward with a program they're pushing very hard. And by the way, I talked to my 49 counterparts. Every state thinks they're in the top 15, just like us. So everybody's out there working pretty hard on this. I'm not aware of any states that said, take your money and give it to Minnesota. So yes, I'm concerned there's some things in here. All of us have some skin in here. You're going to hear from some others, I guess, shortly that have some objections to some parts of it. If I had my choice, some of this stuff wouldn't be in here. But again, this is a large group of stakeholders, from the business partnership to Education Minnesota to Parents United. I mean, there's a number of groups that sat down and gave our best ideas. And the state took those ideas and put them into an application, not trying to please anybody, trying to put something that will give us the money. And then, if Mankato or Roseville or Greenway, Coleraine, or whoever it may be, Farmington or whoever, if that district, that board can sit down with their teachers and their administrators and their citizens and parents and come to consensus about how they want to spend that money to do something good for kids, let's go for it. And just understand that not we don't win every fight, but let's do what's right for the kids. I think this is right for the kids.
Just one correction for the record, because we have Mary Ciccone in the audience. Parents United was not involved.
They were not? There. Well, they should have been.
Yeah. They should have been, is right.
Another group.
Yeah. Sir. Yeah. It's hard to always get all of them in, but that's they're like a big player. So, any other questions for Mr. Meeks? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Kite, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We just got emailed his personal opinion, but we'd like to hear what MASA's official opinion is. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Charlie Kite, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. There's a handout of a recommendation that went out to all the superintendents in the state coming around to you. Let me first start by just saying this has been quite a ride. The federal government really provided states with short notice and in the beginning, frankly, shaky guidance or changing guidance of what to do. And when you step back and think about what's happened in the last 6 weeks, trying to figure out what this grant meant, trying to get input, trying to put a proposal together, and then trying to inform all the districts and all the players, it's not been an easy job. And everybody has been scrambling. And even right as we speak, we've got school boards and teachers, leaders, and superintendents around the state trying to sort this out. There's even school board meetings going on tonight as they're trying to figure it out. I will say, and I'll make a compliment to the Department of Education, that they did a good job of trying to do outreach to the districts. They hustled all over the state. They went out numerous times, and as they had various groups say, well, we don't understand this or that, they were out there working hard at it. And Commissioner Segrin put a lot of effort into this. I said to her if she could have cloned herself 25 times, it would really have helped. But they've done a good job. The recommendation in front of you was written by me. It was to the superintendents. But I'll also say to you that as we've processed this, this is the recommendation of MASA. I wasn't sure how my board and how the officers were going to react, so I said, I'm going to write this. And ultimately, as we processed it more, it is MASA's recommendation. We're recommending to the superintendents that they should sign the memorandum of agreement and they should agree to participate. And I try to write I wrote some rationale in there and some assumptions and some caveats. I even chided some of our superintendents because I had a feeling some of them were going to try to grab the money for a couple years and then run and really not do what the grant meant, and I brought up the ethical issue and so forth. That said, I'd just like to shift a little bit to what I see the future as being. If this grant is to be successful in Minnesota, it's going to require a lot of us working together. First of all, there's an important role for the Department of Education, and if I could summarize it very, very simply, I'd say they need to recognize there's many initiatives already going on in our schools. The best of our school districts are doing 90% of what's in this grant. They need to have a gentle hand and work on not being bureaucratic in their implementation of this grant. And I believe the federal government will give them plenty of leeway, and they need to give the districts some leeway to make this thing work. There's a role for the legislature. You're going to be pressed, I think, in a terrible, horrible short timeline on this issue of voluntary national standards. But you also eventually, I believe, are going to have to tweak the alternative pay plan, because the first time it was passed, it was the first attempt, and there's some issues in there that work well, but there's some parts that don't work so well, and there's, that needs to be dealt with. You're going to have to provide some oversight of that alternative licensure program. I've got good confidence in the Board of Teaching, but I think your watching closely would be an important thing. And I think there's still more work to be done on the charter school statute, and probably other things that you don't know about yet, and I don't know about. For the districts, first of all, we've just got to wait. Basically, you know, you sign this memorandum of agreement, then you sit back till April to figure out if the federal government provides you the grant or not. And I like Bob Meeks's comment. I put Minnesota's chances of getting this grant at about 50-50. And so we'll wait and see. But if it comes in April, then we go into another mad scramble, because I believe the federal regulations say once the grant is given to the state, the local education, the local districts have 90 days to put together their plan. That's a very, very short time to sort this out. And the success is going to lie in the ability for our staffs and our management to work together. So I'm just going to conclude with a final thought and just say this. Implementation of this grant is going to be evolutionary. We won't know all of the issues up front, and we won't know all of the potholes. One of the things I am hoping for, and it was actually spoken by Representative Davney earlier, if we keep concentrating on how we can make as many links to student achievement, student success as possible, not have too much, not worry overly about the money, and frankly, not worry overly about inconveniencing the adults, be they administrators, teachers, or whatever, and concentrate on trying to do this so that the students can come out the best, I think that'll work the best. But it is going to evolve over time, and what I suspect that we'll see in a year from now is going to be somewhat different than what is in the initial application. And I hope the federal government allows us to do that. I hope the State Department of Education allows us to do that. Those are my comments.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kite. And I meant to ask this question of Mr. Meeks as well. You're both part of statewide associations. And one of my concerns with any policy that we do is to be sure that our policies, in fact, have statewide application, implication, and ownership. I've constantly tried to remind myself of that in my own legislation, and so one of my concerns with this is particularly because of the focus, some of the focus areas having to do with low-performing schools, with our achievement gap. Of course, those are issues that are present. Achievement gap issues are present all over the state, much more different than perhaps 20 years ago or so. But still, can you give us a sense among statewide superintendents, as you've engaged with them, what their sense is about a statewide ownership of this agenda, or do you perceive that there may be regional conflicts potentially brewing here?
Representative Mariani and members of the committee, I don't so much see regional conflict, but one of the concerns that I have is that we have seen traditionally that our rural districts are a little bit slower to jump on new initiatives than our suburban or metropolitan ones are. And I actually even wrote about that in my recommendation, because for instance, on the alternative compensation funding, we've got a lot more metro districts that decided that they would participate than our rural districts. Now, some of the best alternative compensation plans in the state are out in some very tiny districts, but not as many of them grabbed on. What that has done is it's created a kind of a funding inequity to some degree between the rural and the metro districts in terms of the funding of the QCOM or alternative comp. You've got the same potential to have this happen here with the race to the top, where if fewer rural districts decide to sign on, they get disadvantaged somewhat in terms of the funding. Now, it's not the funding that's so important. It's that the funding drives some of the changes, and many of the changes in here are, frankly, the funding for professional development going forward. So that's my concern more than anything else, and I'm kind of hoping that the rural Minnesota school districts do decide to participate. One last comment on this. When we started implementing the alternative compensation program, it was particularly difficult to put that program together in very tiny school districts. I think you all passed some legislation last year that will allow small districts to combine together. And we're going to try to encourage our small districts to put groups of districts together to create a single plan that will help bridge across a number of districts. Remember, many of those districts have 300, 400, and 500 students in them, K through 12. So they're pretty limited in terms of resources.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kite and also Mr. Meeks, I would have asked him the same question. You know, I spent my career in education, and we see a lot of programs come and then they go. And could you give me an idea of how many of these initiatives, for example, great teachers and leaders, can be sustained after this period when federal funding ends? Mm-hmm. What percentage of these funds do you see as useful as startup or initiative? But how much of this will be an ongoing commitment? And where do you see your organization, the other organization, and the state legislature and the state government going to meet these, considering the economic challenges we're facing?
Representative and members of the committee, that's a good question. One of the challenges always of a grant is that if you use it for ongoing programming, then when it runs out, you have a problem. To the degree that there are parts of the grant that really work well, and the staff of the schools are feeling they work well, the school districts will have to re-resource to some degree to try to include those, and some of the things will go away. The other piece is, I believe, if I'm reading right and listening right to the, at the federal level, I think that much of the newly reauthorized ESEA, which is probably going to be reauthorized in 2011, who knows, is going to pick up a number of these principles, and there's going to be some federal money that is going to be in grant form out to states and school districts that are going to help to continue some of these things. But that is a challenging piece to figure out, how do you keep it going once it's up and operating.
Mr. Kaidan, I always appreciate your candidness and your ethical reminder I want to ask you about here. And it goes back to my question with Commissioner Segrin that I thought I had one answer and then I got another one, but you're talking about Minnesota's version of the pay for performance provision. What do you mean by that?
Chairman Greiling, members of the committee, I'm going to first just ask you to just reference where that is,
okay.
So I'm sure what I'm saying.
On your last page under an ethical reminder,
okay.
You said, I have heard that some districts are considering participating in this grant for about 2 years and then abandoning the grant right before their districts need to begin participating in Minnesota's version of the pay for performance, or QCOMP.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what I was trying to refer to there is that pay for performance is kind of a general term. And as it's referred to at the federal level, I think you could actually ask a lot of the federal folks and say, what do you really mean? And they'd probably give you different answers. And as you go across the country, you'll see different versions of what this is going to look like. We know what Minnesota's statute is right now. That's what my reference is to. Minnesota's version would be your alternative compensation statute. And I actually always thought that in the beginning, I have to tell you that I was a great skeptic of the alternative compensation plan. And as I've watched districts work with it, and I will tell you some districts are kind of half-faking, but the ones that are really doing it well, it actually is moving things in terms of the attitude, the partnership that the staff has in terms of trying to improve things. I thought one of the geniuses of the plan is that it required a voluntary decision on the part of the staff to participate. I think you had to have at least 60% of your faculty said, we'll do it, otherwise you're not going to do it. I'm concerned that we are pushing that towards being a sort of a forced decision. I actually argued with the commissioner and her staff that maybe that wasn't the smartest way to go on the grant. Nevertheless, that's what's here. My concern was is that some people were going to say, well, we'll pretend that we're going to move towards QComp. We'll go through the motions, and ultimately, a couple years out, we'll say, oops, can't do it. What I've said to people since then is, you know, if you, everybody's making a bona fide attempt to bring a alternative comp program together and ultimately doesn't come together, I don't think you have an ethical issue. But if you go into it right up front saying, we're just going to take the money and run, that is an ethical issue, and I'm trying to persuade the superintendents across the state that they don't fall into what I consider that trap.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Kite.
You.
Ms. Alzweiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alzweiger with Education Minnesota. And certainly we'll come from a little bit different perspective here, but please know that Education Minnesota has the very same goals as the Race to the Top does in terms of trying to close the achievement gap, improving student graduation rates, improving college and career preparation. All of these are very important to Education Minnesota. However, we do feel that the federal Race to the Top guidance, given it is a level of detail that forces solutions where there may not be problems. And actually, the reverse is true as well, in that it doesn't give enough latitude to staff so that they can make plans and develop programs that work for the best for their particular problems in the state. I'd just like to ask you, the handout that you're receiving, I'll talk about it in a moment, but I'd just like to ask you just to think about this. How much do you really know about Race to the Top? How many hours have you discussed it? Can you name all of the components within Race to the Top? I can't. And I have been studying this for hours and hours. I am part of a team of about 12 Education Minnesota staff who have been discussing this for weeks and hours. And yet, it seems that we are supposed to have blind faith and say, we support this. And if we don't, we might be accused of not being reform-minded. We're talking about our children. We're talking about the education of these kids for many years to come. I hope that you are very thoughtful. I hope you are reflective about the decisions that are made. Think about what you do during the course of a legislative session. You debate ideas, you exchange ideas, you amend language. If you were to look, you don't have to look right now, but on pages 41 to 44 of the PowerPoint slide, that's all about great teachers and leaders. If you put those concepts into a bill, or all of these concepts into a bill, you would have a 100-page bill, probably at least. And you know how we debate, you debate, over an if, a but, an and, an or, a yes, a no, a left, a right, a may, a must, a shall, and you do not have any of that detail here. All you have are bullets. And you know, the department, I know they're working very hard, they have good goals, but our teachers who have participated in these meetings have been in three-hour meetings. We've been in a couple of four-hour meetings or so, three, four-hour meetings. How can you really get input about the substance, about what this is? And there are a number of proposals included. I'm just going to list off some, and I'm not going to get into detail. I could give you 8 hours of testimony today, but I won't do that. Mandatory enhanced QComp. What does that actually look like? There was a bill last year in the session that you debated. Tiered licensure tied to test scores. There's some good questions that you asked. Does anybody know what significant is? Commissioner Segrin talked about significant, I don't remember exactly what the word, but it was significant evaluation changes, I believe it was. And what the real question is, what will the department accept? Because the bottom line is, they get to put out the criteria for the school district to put out their proposal for receiving tenure continuing contract related to evaluation. And if it doesn't fit the department's criteria, it won't be accepted. Induction, peer assistance and review, state-directed professional development. A reference was made about 10 days. That's 10 days over 4 years. That is not a lot of time or professional development. Loss of due process, if changes in evaluation. A memo of agreement signed only by the superintendent, no skin in the game. They just get to sign. I would encourage my friend at the School Boards Association to recommend that the department amend their application and require that the teachers union sign off on it, and it doesn't happen unless the teachers union has signed off on it, if that's how they really feel. There's issues in this with evaluation, pay for performance, promotion of teachers, retention of teachers, equitable distribution of effective teachers, those are transfer and seniority rights, charter school expansion, statewide evaluation system. That agenda right there would fill up Representative Greiling's and Representative Mariani's entire meeting schedule this year. And you will not have the opportunity to debate it. Many of these proposals that I just listed were proposals that have been brought forward by the governor and other individuals in the recent years. Representative Erickson had alternative licensure. There's what I call rolling tenure. You're not hearing that now, but it's 5 years, and you may or may not be renewed. Or it could be every year. We're not really sure about what that looks like. Changes in evaluation, changes in due process. And I got to tell you, the MSBA and the superintendents have supported most of these initiatives that were brought forth by the governor. So it does not surprise me that we hear that they want local control. But let's put the local control then in the, let's give us equal say. Let's have the teachers sign off on it, or it doesn't happen. The teachers have not had much input in this at all. So I won't go into any more discussion about the level of detail and discussion. I will say this, however. Many of you were around when the Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System, or QCOMP, was put into place. And if you were here, you heard Education Minnesota say over and over again, we are supporting new ways of paying teachers. What we cannot support is elimination of just overall elimination of steps and lanes, pay tied to test scores, and there were a couple of other things. It has to be locally negotiated. It has to be voluntary. Those were the four things that we said. And in the final bill, the House had eliminate. The Senate had nothing. The decision was to make it reform. So what happened? The department interpreted that reform meant eliminate. Now, when we get into the implementation, I want to share with you what happened to two local school districts who wanted to go into QCOMP. One was Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan. There's a very prominent politician who comes from there. They were given 5 years to eliminate steps and lanes. Sauk Center was not afforded that luxury, and the board and the teachers union filed a lawsuit, and they lost. Implementation and defining what the criteria looks like is incredibly important, or it leaves so much interpretation up to those who may have interest in determining how things actually happen without your approval. I wanted to share with you the article from Education Week, because Education Minnesota is not alone in some of their concerns. It really depends on how the state commissioner or the department is putting the plan out together. Florida is another one that's kind of in the same boat as Education Minnesota. And in the article, you will see that the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingartner, says very clearly that there are states where it is working. Massachusetts, Kansas, Montana. I guess she cites Montana. The author of the article cites Massachusetts and Kansas, where they had actual teacher union involvement. But the strange thing is, about all the stuff that I've talked about, the group that has been involved the least in developing this plan, at least at the state level, are the teachers. Those that are closest to the students, those who probably have the best idea about how to close the achievement gap. I wanted to talk briefly about the application process. We think that maybe there could have been some extension on the timelines. The federal guidelines say that it has to be, the state has to file their application by January 19th, and the superintendent must sign by January 13th. However, the federal guidelines say that the department in their application could have the LEA, the local education agency, sign up to 90 days after the application is submitted. In other words, they could have 90 days after January 19th. We believe that that would give a lot more information to people about what it actually looks like. It would give the legislature some time to have some discussion and so on. We would also ask, why is it that the LEA is signing? This has been brought up a little bit already, so I'll keep it short. Is it for sound educational policy, or is it for money? If LEAs or superintendents are signing for money, I don't know if that's the right reason to sign. Think about a few years ago when many of you were here in the legislature and we had the thing called the Profile of Learning. And I think every district signed on to get that, whatever it was, $13 to $17, whatever it was, $17, so that they could get the extra funding. We think that this proposal has statewide impact on districts that are not in Race to the Top. Just very quickly, statewide testing changes, the core standards you've talked about, and teacher licensure with the alternative teacher licensure program. Even if what District A is not participating in Race to the Top, there will be a statewide alternative teacher preparation program that will license teachers, and then your district may or may not hire some of these individuals. Funding, I think, is a big issue as well. Initially, the department said that there would be between $60 and $175 million that they would be eligible for. And then it changed to $200 million. And later, we heard that one morning, and later that afternoon, in another presentation, we heard it was $225 million. So we're not exactly sure why those numbers are changing, and maybe someone can explain that. We don't know about the state grants. These are additional monies beyond your Title I monies. And if you do not understand this piece, I think it tells you very clearly there is a lot more to learn about Race to the Top that you don't know about, and I think that there should be more efforts to inform people about what is in Race to the Top. The department will be able to determine who gets these supplemental grants and how much. We believe there is not sufficient funding to implement the program. It requires staff time, training, additional processes, and all of these take time and all of these take money. Think about it. Training teachers and staff on data, on testing, on standards, on new evaluation. We do not think that there is enough money in this program to pay for itself. And then this is funded only for 4 years. And if you want to continue the data training, if you want to continue the testing training, if you want to continue the standards training, you have to continue this with all new teachers or teachers after a number of years to keep everybody on board and educated and so on. And we are going to have a large number of teachers retire in the next 5 years. Well, maybe they won't be able to afford to, but that's what we had heard was going to happen. And so you're starting to get a whole new group of people, and your expenses are going to be higher maybe than you would think. So we're concerned about the sustainability of the funding for the programs. Let's face it, we've got a budget deficit in Minnesota, and I think some of these superintendents might be signing off to offset some of the cuts that they're anticipating they may or may not have, or the freezes that they may or may not have. QCOMP, or Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System. You know, the Minnesota law is voluntary, but for a school district to receive the Race to the Top funding, they must have a mandatory enhanced QCOMP program. Now, we've heard different answers today than we have heard in past meetings, and even from what our members have heard today. I'll explain in a little bit. What if they can't come to an agreement? Let's just say they decide to go into Race to the Top. The superintendents decide we're going to go into the Race to the Top. What does that mean? It means the teachers are forced to try to come to a QCOMP agreement. What if they can't come up with one? One of our teachers told us, or members told us today, that some members in the QCOMP districts have been told that they will have to implement enhanced QCOMP, even if they do not participate in Race to the Top. Now, this is different than we just heard from Commissioner Segrin, and I would hope that, you know, she is the lead at the department, so maybe that can be changed. But those are some controversies and some inconsistencies that we're hearing about. With QCOMP, I ask you to think about your decisions about funding. You have some very difficult decisions to make about funding. If Race to the Top is in place and a number of districts are in, there is going to be a significant pressure on funding QCOMP. And are you going to be able to sustain it? And then one of the legislators, somebody brought it up earlier, does this widen the gap between those that have QCOMP, that have Race to the Top, who don't, metro, rural, suburban, urban? One of the last issues I want to bring up is licensing. This is probably one of the most problematic proposals in here. I'm not even talking today about the alternative teacher prep, and you know already how we feel about that. But I am talking about teacher licenses now being tied to evaluation and employment. Now, there have been a lot of changes in interpretation, and we still are trying to get a handle on exactly what it will look like. But in the past, the Board of Teaching has been autonomous and has had the authority to take care of all of the rulemaking, and Representative Greiling brought up some interesting points. But this is coming a lot from the direction of the department, and it appears that they're dictating more of what the Board of Teaching is going to do. That is far different than the law has been, the state statutes say is their authority. What you could have, we believe, if we understand this correctly, is you have a teacher who starts teaching and they get a provisional license and they are in the QCOMP program and they meet whatever those enhanced QCOMP requirements are, and we heard a little bit of differing information about how much is it tied to test scores or not. But we do know that test scores are part of that evaluation. We believe that to be the case. So if a teacher has a successful year in evaluations, and that's partially going to be based on test score, they would have their license, they would be able to continue teaching. If they don't, we understand it to be that they would lose their license and they would lose their employment. Whereas before, as in current law, you have your license. It is not tied to employment. Right now, teachers have due process, and there is a process where you have to, where you go through to make sure that you are, you know, letting go those people who deserve to be let go. But this is a whole different situation. I got to tell you a story about that a field staff shared with me. She was a teacher who said, she said, I have been working in the same school district. I was working so hard in one school, School A, for 3 years, and I felt like I was an awful teacher. She then went to another school in that same district, and suddenly, according to the test scores, she was a very good teacher. Now, there are a lot of factors that influence kids' performance. Absolutely one of them is teacher quality, without a doubt. But there are some other very important factors. Do you have a teacher who is fully and appropriately licensed in their content area? Are parents involved? Are there low income issues? What is the level of the parent education? And we could get into a whole number of other issues as well. So looking at teacher licensure in a manner that ties it to test scores and ties it to employment has a whole series of unintended consequences that really affect why do I teach. Teaching is about collaboration and about working together to have each child reach their full potential. And I know we seem to be going towards this business competition model, and to a certain degree that is good. Kids are not the blueberries in ice cream, where you can get, you know, the best blueberries or whatever. If you've heard that analogy before, I'll tell it some other time. I'll tell you it's very good. Representative Chair Greiling, I really appreciate you giving me the time to talk as much as I did about this. I often say there are many administrative groups and there's one teacher group, so I appreciate the extra time. I didn't bring this article today, but I do want to tell you a little bit about this article. It's from the Education Week, and it's from the November 4th edition of Education Week, and the title is Closing Schools in Chicago Show Little Academic Gain. Subtitle is Federal Officials Are Pushing Similar Turnaround Policy. Take a look. Kids are not business products. Kids are important. We have to make very sound educational policies. Teachers need to be involved in this process. We are not here to block. We are here to make things successful. We want more than anything to close the achievement gap and do what's best for our kids. We don't think it's right that you are left out of this process. We don't think it's right that a number of these proposals that have been killed year after year after year, whether it's Republicans or Democrats who have been in control, now suddenly are brought to light and are going to have the force and effect of law. So we ask you to be very cautious, do what you can. You know, this is just phase one. There will be other phases. And I do have two other colleagues, one who's an expert on education issues and another one who has examined this through legal as an attorney, and they would be more than happy to answer questions if you like.
Okay, questions, members? Representative Grappolo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a correction for the testifier. I don't think you could testify for 8 hours because I thought you had a flight to catch. comment. The testifier brought up the importance of LEA signing off on this matter and how important it is for local teachers and local bargaining units to sign off on that. I wish the teachers union would have had that same emphatic viewpoint on the statewide teachers' health insurance bill. To allow that sort of sign off in, but that's a different issue for a different time. My question for the testifier is just taking a step back, the overall one of the principles of RTTT, is an accurate measurement of teacher effectiveness student achievement?
Ms. Osweiler.
Student achievement.
Ms. Osweiler.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I think that could be one factor of teacher effectiveness. But how do you define student achievement? Because I think one could argue that student achievement is not only test scores, but it is demonstration through physical activity, through development of a portfolio, for writing an essay, for participating in projects. Teachers are definitely concerned with what kids know and can answer on tests, but they care a lot more about a lot more issues related to kids.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Grafwell. And Madam Chair, and to the testifier, thank you. And I appreciate the fact that there is certainly a difference between a difference of opinion about how you measure student achievement. But if I understand the position of the teachers union, it is that if there is an agreed upon metric of what student achievement is, whatever that definition is, that it is okay to delineate good performance versus bad performance of teacher effectiveness based on whatever that metric is.
Ms. Osweiler.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think you might be twisting my words just a little bit.
Just a little.
But
just a little.
But, you know, right now, teachers are evaluated all of the time. And we want them to be evaluated. In fact, we have, you know, a very long probationary period. And a teacher who comes into the teaching profession has 3 years to prove that they're an effective teacher. If a teacher is not an effective teacher, they shouldn't be given continuing contract status with current law. If a teacher who has continuing contract status, which is often called tenure, and if they're not performing, currently there is a system in place that allows an administrator to make changes in employment for that person, but the only thing that we have, Representative Garofalo, is due process, so that you can't arbitrarily get rid of somebody because of some reason that's arbitrary. So due process is not a bad thing. And if a teacher is not doing what they should, then the administrator should take action. I can tell you, when I was a field staff person, I helped counsel at least one teacher out of the teaching profession because I knew that there were issues. The teachers' union is very proactive.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Bly. And then
just to comment, Madam Chair, and Ms. Allswager, I'm recalling a conversation I had with an eighth grade teacher from Houston, Minnesota, when the first basic skills tests were coming out. And his class of eighth graders had the highest, you know, scores in the state. And he said, that's great, you know, but I'm real worried about what's going to happen to me next year when the seventh graders come to my class, because they will not do as well as this group of eighth graders. And it had to do with their innate ability. And it just so happened that he had a class of eighth graders that were doing really well. Now, would we say that that teacher didn't have, you know, good outcomes with his students because he was lacking, or because he had a different set of students with different abilities?
Ms. Allswager. Or was that just a comment?
Just a comment.
Just a comment. Okay. Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me another question. Ms. Allswager, as you know, I was a member of Education Minnesota for a number of years and a local president. So many of the concerns that you've raised are shared by me. At the same time, we know that for whatever reason, educational attainment for many children in the United States in the public schools is not reaching the level that we need for international competition or whatever. And so whenever situations like this come eventually, then somebody is going to step in and try to rectify it. In this case, it's the federal government. Now, Representative Garofalo beat me to the punch last year when he introduced his bill to pull Minnesota out of No Child Left Behind. I wanted credit for that, but he got it. But anyway, I did support it regardless. Now, all those things being said, and this is a situation we face, and I have a great concern for the reputation of Education Minnesota. And here we sit with a budget shortfall. Education Minnesota will be coming to us asking us to try to maintain at least the funding. That's going to be very difficult, as you know. What will Education Minnesota say to the public, to media, when Education Minnesota advises that the state of Minnesota not pursue these funds? And at the same time, ask the legislature to continue funding or increase funding for the public schools. What will the public say about our union and whether it is a promoter of educational reform or not? Because most people live busy lives. They don't know all the nuances and all the issues that you've just delineated to this committee. We know it, but the public doesn't. And I just have concern that there will be those in our society who will attack Education Minnesota and teachers in general, again, as being naysayers and roadblocks to reform. How do you plan to deal with that?
Ms. Allswager.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, that's an excellent question. And President Duer has laid out an alternative plan through at a press conference a couple of weeks ago about what we could do to try to meet the needs of the students. And it also focused on more collaboration, on mentoring, on induction of teachers, on teacher training. And frankly, I don't have all that information here. It's up at my seat if you want me to get it. But we are very open to talking about ways to improve student achievement at any time. And I think that his ideas were very good ideas. I think Commissioner Segrin said that, you know, that some of those ideas were ones that were looked at positively by the department. Some of them were in Race to the Top. But there's a number of components that I laid out that we believe are problematic. We're not opposed to change. We need change to make sense. You know, I think Mr. Meeks made a comment about competitive grants, and it is difficult, especially when we've got a system where some of our districts are getting QCOP money now, and now we're going to kind of expand that gap. And getting money to everybody probably makes some sense. But I'd be happy to share that information. I think we actually sent it to the Education Committee. We did send it to the Education Committee, but I can send it again if you'd like.
Okay, just to give people a roadmap here before I call on two more legislators, we have Representative Breinert, Representative Downey, and then we will go to Mr. Aronson and Ms. Costain. There are two more people who have asked to testify that we may or may not get to because we are going to adjourn at 9 o'clock. Representative Breinert, and then Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be brief and to the point. This is more a comment on the whole issue of measurement. And I think that some comments have been made tonight that aren't defensible on a research basis. And I'll just say that we need to look at connecting student achievement to appropriate performance measures. And we have been doing that. But I think we need to be very cautious about the research base for what links we make. There's things happening with this proposal from the department that I have concerns about in terms of what links that we make. And there's also positions taken by Education Minnesota about whether we should link individual teachers to data that I have issues with. And what I want to say is we need to have the courage to look at the research and to really address what we can learn from the data, but not to put the cart before the horse on what the research tells us, so that we're already making linkages and applying, you know, whether it's staff salary or teacher advancement to those decisions without the research. So I'm just saying, we need to look at the research and really be willing to confront what decisions should come from that before we make these decisions.
Thank you. Did Ms. Garnett want to comment on that? Or Ms. Franklin, I mean?
Madam Chair, I'm Garnett Franklin. I'm an education issue specialist at Ed Minnesota. I spend a lot of time with folks, and I think I've seen many of you at meetings talking about student testing, measurement, accountability. And I applaud your observation regarding using the data to really look at what specifically does tie to it. It is very seductive to look to student tests and create a box score to see who wins and who loses in the championship rounds. There's some really good work being done right here in Minnesota regarding that. I am honored to consult with some of the folks at the University of Minnesota who are a part of the Bush project, and in particular who are doing side research that looks at a national project that looks at how we assess student learning and how teachers impact that. but I'd like to toss in something that's a little bigger. We've spent a lot of time tonight talking about what we need to do to teachers. What the research really does support, rather than a direct correlation with student test scores and teachers, is a direct correlation between student test scores and the culture in schools. If we could get to the point where we're talking about creating cultures that support and direct learning for students that are based on data and the research to design learning opportunities for kids, we're talking about the whole culture in a school, not just a magic wand that's issued with your teaching license.
Thank you. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Alshwaga, you've raised a number of really good points, and I mean that sincerely. I think you've gone to a level of detail in the grant documents that many of us probably have not had a chance to do. And with these kind of large RFPs, kind of the difficulty of a large state government bureaucracy responding to an even larger federal government bureaucracy's RFP come to light. And I think we see some of the difficulties of trying to foster innovation and create a spot where we can maybe take some risk without taking too much risk in the name of innovation in that kind of a context. So I truly respect your comments here tonight. And I think my questions are maybe more for Commissioner Segrin. And if we can't address them in the time that we have tonight, maybe some further communication to these committee members would be helpful. But I'm curious how the department has structured our response in terms of kind of sizing and scaling the implementation scope to these dollars that seem to be fairly ambiguous. And then maybe even more importantly, how at the end of this grant period do we kind of unwind? And I think all of us are watching the federal tentacles creep down into what we would hope to be independent school districts. And I just saw some numbers, and granted there's federal stimulus in this, but I think we're over $1 billion flowing from the federal government into Minnesota's public schools this year. That's a big part of our budget. And if we get 2 to 4 years from now and we're in a spot where that's growing, and now we're even more dependent upon what's coming from the federal government, I think that's a bit of an ominous trend. And I'd like to make sure that we've got kind of the escape hatches, if you will, in our planning for this proposal, kind of an exit strategy. So if the commissioner wants to comment in terms of how we're sizing and scoping our response for the grants, and then maybe as importantly,
we're not going to call up Commissioner Segrin again, because we have 10 more minutes. We have two more people that are scheduled and two that we probably aren't going to get to. But I think, Representative Downey, you raise a really good question that hopefully Commissioner Segrin can get us an answer in writing to all of us, because I think...
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's probably the best use of time. So
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is something we will continue to discuss the whole session. I have discussed, in order to have a way to fund it after it runs out in 2014, the new Minnesota Miracle, which would be the perfect vehicle to... start phasing in, and there's the funding to continue all these things should the research be there. But I think we need to discuss that all throughout the session, because that's huge and key. Mr. Aronson, thank you for coming up so fast. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Roger Aronson. I represent the two statewide school principal organizations, the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. We have 1,700 school principals throughout Minnesota, principals and assistant principals. Sometimes that's somewhat confusing about that. And we include the Minneapolis principals, St. Paul principals, and then all of the other principals from around the state. Principals have a lot at stake in the race to the top process, and I think our executive directors have been participants in the meetings with you as well, Madam Chair, and they have crafted a statement that's going to go out to our membership actually tomorrow, and that we laud the goals of RTT in terms of closing the achievement gap and the attempt to increase graduation rates. And I might say at the outset of the comments, I think our experience with Commissioner Segrin, both when she was a legislator personally and legislatively, that she has always been individually supportive of principals, that she was key in the creation of the Board of School Administrators, actually stopped an attempt by the department to kill it the second year that it was in effect, and you as well, Madam Chair, and with the Principals Academy, we've enjoyed a considerable amount of support from the committee and a recognition of the importance in school principals. I see Representative Brainerd's left, so it'll be okay to pander to her a bit. Her comments are right on point when she says that we need to be more thoughtful on this